TV party tonight.
All right!
We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
Tonight!
Saturday Night Live!
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're also going to be talking about some fans who go too far, super fans who go too far. We got some amazing things that people can do with their bodies and a few SNL topics to jump into as well. But right now, it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about, and we'll recap the TCA Awards, which were handed out a few days ago. So, yeah, let's bring Dan Feinberg in. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How about you, Nick?
All right. Busy week for you, obviously. Busy couple of weeks, correct?
Yes. Well, I mean, last time we talked was 2 weeks ago, and we were fairly early into this here TCA press tour thing, and now it's 2 weeks later, and I'm in the exact same hotel room and fading quickly.
How much longer is it happening?
The last day of panels will be Thursday with NBC, so
okay.
We will wrap things up with a half day on Thursday, and then people will retreat back to their own homes and maybe to sanity.
Yeah, I can't imagine over 2 weeks. I mean, I was in a hotel for three days this past weekend for the Flashback Horror Convention, and when I got home, I felt like I had been away for a month.
Yeah, I've gone home a couple times just to refill shampoo bottles and check mail and do other various rudimentary things, but I am perfectly looking forward to actually sleeping in my own bed.
Yeah.
At a certain point.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, so what? Give me some more of the highlights. It was a couple of weeks ago the last time we talked to you. What were some of the highlights? Tell me about the panels, and we'll get to the awards as well.
Well, the awards probably really and truly were the highlights, not the biggest highlight, not just because they marked the end of my TCA presidency. So at this point, I am nothing. I am merely a man, Nick. So, you know, I may need to hook you up with the new TCA president so that you have some real clout for
right.
Biweekly
yeah.
TV talk. there have been a lot of, you know, eventful panels, always interesting to get opinions from various network executives, and so in the past few days we've had John Landgraf of FX, we've had Charlie Collier of Fox, we had Carrie Burke of ABC, lots and lots of the network executives talking about the state of the business, which of course is busy, which I don't need them to tell me. I don't need them to tell me that there are lots and lots of TV shows and lots of networks, and that there are going to be more and more streaming services coming week after week, and that they're all just going to roll over us like a cement mixer.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned FX. Did they make the announcement at TCA about Atlanta?
They did, indeed. Atlanta will be back for two seasons, has been ordered for a third and fourth season of 8 episodes apiece, beginning production on the third season next spring. I don't know how quickly they're going to be able to get that in the can, and if their hope is to have episodes by the Emmy eligibility window next May, or if the plan is, you know, next fall. But yes, Atlanta all set, renewed, and beginning production again in the spring, which is good news.
It's great news. It's great. I wish it was sooner, but it's great news.
I wish it were sooner. I wish that that Fargo, which is going to be shooting in your neck of the woods,
yes.
Not sure exactly where, but, you know, keep an eye out. So that's going to be in production in the fall, and so it presumably will be on TV in time for the next Emmy eligibility period, so I would guess probably a premiere next April or so, give or take.
Yeah,
well, really looking forward to that one.
It's great news. It's just that, you know, I understand that, you know, Donald Glover, you know, he's not busy enough.
he whatever he wants to do at this point, FX is perfectly happy to have him do, and obviously he came to them and said, I've got two seasons, and, you know, John Landgraf is not going to give us plot details, and I don't really know what plot details possibly could make any difference. You know, people were asking, what did Donald Glover tell you about these seasons? As if, even if we were told the exact linear plot of what he has in mind, it would make any difference whatsoever. So,
Yeah. Like,
I couldn't tell you what the plot of season two was, really. But it was fantastic. So,
that
was the plot. Fantastic.
Yeah. He was just in town, played at Lollapalooza this past weekend here in Chicago.
Oh, nice. Yes, he's, you know, again, as you may have hinted, he's a fairly busy guy, and so FX is happy to have him in the fold for whatever he wants to do. So yeah, that was definitely one of their primary announcements. Probably overshadowed a tiny bit by the announcement of American Crime Story impeachment.
Oh, tell everybody about this. I love the casting of this. I'm losing my mind already.
Oh no, the cast is fantastic. So yes, it is American Horror Story Impeachment, and so it will obviously be
American
about
American Crime Story, not Horror Story.
Yes, not American. Well, you know, it's all one thing or the other. But yes, at one point the thing was that Ryan Murphy said he was doing one of the American Horror Story seasons as election themed, and it kind of was, but yeah. So anyway, yes, it is American Crime Story Impeachment, and it will be about the Clinton impeachment. Really, my brain is not, so there was no Kennedy impeachment.
Right.
All great. Anyway, so starring Sarah Paulson as Linda Tripp, Beanie Feldstein as Monica Lewinsky, Annalee Ashford as Paula Jones.
It's just genius casting. That's just genius casting.
It's fairly brilliant, and Monica Lewinsky will be a producer on it, which is a key thing because Ryan Murphy said that he had this idea in mind for a season a couple of years ago, and that he realized at a certain point that the only way he could do it would be if he had Monica Lewinsky actually involved, and so she will be a producer.
Yeah.
And so the plan is to have that one ready to premiere by the end of September 2020. Mm-hmm. So
that's exciting.
Get ready for it.
No, I'm ready. I'm already ready. I think it's great. And now you mentioned American Horror Story. This next one is like 80s slasher, right?
Yes, it is 1984 as the sort of theme or title or whatever it is. And I'm not completely sure what it is or if it's really just another season of Scream Queens. And for some reason, he's kind of pretending it's a American Horror Story season.
Yeah.
But the funny thing there being that I made it through and finished both of the two seasons of Scream Queens, and I don't remember the last American Horror Story season I finished, so maybe he should be doing it that way.
Yeah,
I have the
only American Horror Story season that I watched all the way through was the first one, and with about four episodes left, I was done with it. But I usually don't make it past episode three of each season. I just turn it off. I it just does nothing for me.
Yeah, and every season I also start and make it through limited periods. I think this past season, I don't think I made it through more than four. I think four was how many I made it, because it was a little different in its sort of post-apocalyptic setting, and that kind of made me curious where it was going, and then I realized I wasn't really actually all that curious at all. But
yeah.
You know,
so speaking, since we were talking about FX a couple of minutes ago, I'm assuming you've seen, have you had time to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I have not. Who gets out of the hotel? No, I'm looking forward to, knock on wood, God willing, catching it on Friday afternoon when I actually have my first chance to pause and breathe.
It's great. That's all I'm saying. It's great. But I do want to say this. Max from Better Things, unbelievable in the movie.
Okay.
She's got so much awesome stuff to do. She doesn't show up till late in the film, but my god. That's all I'm saying. So there's just a little,
okay,
because we were talking
I'm looking forward to it. I had a couple days that were maybe half full that initially when I looked at the schedule I thought, okay, maybe this is the day I try to get out to see American Horror Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and each time things filled that time. So Friday afternoon is my hope, knock on wood.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good chunk of time too. It's not like you could sneak out because it's about two hours and 40 minutes. So.
Yeah, I think that was probably the deal breaker. The couple times when I actually had a couple windows of free time, it was whittled down to only 3 hours, and that became impossible.
Yeah, well, it's really great. I mean, I think it's way up on my list of Tarantino movies. It's just great, and it's different in tone than anything he's ever done. It's the sweetest movie he's ever made. But yeah, I thought it was really, really great. And again, look out for what's her name? Mikey Madison, right?
Who plays? That is correct.
Yeah, Mikey Madison, because she really kills in the movie. It's so good. So, all right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, when we come back, talk a little bit more about the whole TCA and all that stuff, and then we'll talk about the awards. They handed out the awards, and lots of new TV to talk about as well. Dan Feinberg joins us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll get to them later at 312-981-7200. Yeah. Right now, though, we want to get back to our conversation. Every 2 weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, let's talk about the winners. How did the awards go? How did the award show go? Tell everybody about the award show. You had two great guests, hosts.
We had Desus and Mero of, obviously, Showtime's Desus and Mero, right, which all people should be watching.
Yep.
I hope they are, because it's fantastic. They were our hosts, and the show was... We moved at an amazingly fast clip. I think we were done in an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
That's extra fast. I don't remember the last time we were done that fast. And the remarkable thing was that nearly all of our winners were actually there, but Desus and Mero were extremely funny, fairly high, and just really in good spirits and enjoyed being there. And so they were fun to be around, and they kept the energy high. They came out a couple times during the show. Usually our hosts make an appearance at the beginning, and that's it. That's basically all that they're there for, is to do a 10-minute monologue at the top and be gone. But they made multiple appearances, were very funny, talked about how they brought the bodega to the Beverly Hilton ballroom, and they threw out honey buns and other various bodega items to the audience. Some people seemed amused, other people seemed bemused. And yeah, no, they were a lot of fun, and the show itself was really just a lot of fun, a lot of good speeches, and like I said, nearly everybody was there, which is always important, because, you know, if it's just a bunch of taped acceptance speeches, that's not nice.
Yeah.
But if people are actually there to accept and give long and meaningful speeches, it's a pleasure.
Well, so. let's go through the winners. The individual achievement in drama went to the great Michelle Williams for Fosse Verdon.
And she was so wonderful. She gave, I would say, a speech that probably was 7 to 10 minutes. And it was basically a story. It was a story about how when she came out to Hollywood and started auditioning, all she wanted to do was to do TV, because she thought that TV meant that you would have a family, and that you'd have a family week in and week out that you got to be with for years at a time, and that she... found a family on Fosse Verdon, and it was just so touching and beautiful speech. I think she won absolutely everybody over. So
yeah, that's
great moment for her.
She's awesome. Individual achievement in comedy, Phoebe Waller-Bridge for Fleabag.
And that is not the last time you're going to hear that name in this conversation. Yes, she was wonderful, and she is just so crazily talented and compelling and utterly likable, and so this was a very good night for Phoebe Waller-Bridge and for Fleabag, and we were glad to have her, and I hope that it gives her a boost for Emmys in a couple weeks.
That's awesome. The outstanding achievement in news and information went to the HBO documentary Leaving Neverland.
It did, and that is bound to cause more people on Twitter to send harassing emails and whatnot. That is what happens if you say nice things about leaving Neverland. So the less said about that, the better.
Okay.
Let's keep safe.
Okay. Outstanding Achievement Reality Programming went to Queer Eye.
For the second straight year on that one. And this year, Netflix got out the entire Fab Five. Last year, there were a couple random producers, but none of the stars. So this year, though, we had all of the Fab Five, and they were pleased to be there. They seemed mostly pleased to meet Phoebe Waller-Bridge, which is entirely fair.
okay. She works for a competing streaming service, though.
The TCA Awards, they bring everybody together.
Ah, I see. Okay. An Outstanding Achievement for Youth Programming went to Arthur.
And this is another one of those things that you only get at the TCA Awards because we try to emphasize the youth part of youth programming. And so this is pretty much the only opportunity that creators from a PBS Kids show have to be at an award show where they're basically on equal footing with all of these, you know, streaming powerhouses. And
yeah.
So they always give great speeches and they're always so happy to be there. And Arthur has had this year where they had the controversial same-sex interspecies marriage, and I'm sure that helped it get votes. And they just talked about the importance of teaching kids inclusivity and love. And, you know, it was touching.
That's nice. How long has Arthur been on? Man.
Many years.
Yeah.
Many years. This is the first time it's won. I think it might have been nominated once or twice before, but yes, it's been on for many, many years.
Yes. Outstanding Achievement in Sketch Variety Shows went to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Not a surprise there.
Not a surprise. Frequent winner. He never attends because he always has a TV show that he has to do literally the next day.
Yeah.
But he always sends an extremely funny thank you video. And then it became a running joke because Desus and Mero, in addition to having been nominated in that category, apparently share studio space with John Oliver. So they made many jokes about how they were going to make sure that the trophy got to John Oliver.
Okay, very cool. Very cool. Outstanding new program, Russian Doll.
Had great attendance for that as well. Natasha Lyonne and Amy Poehler accepted, co-creators, along with Leslie Headland. And, you know, it's great. It's a great show. That was a really good category. You know, what might have been nice to see Succession win, but not going to quibble excessively. Really good show. They gave a less prepared speech, but the joke of it was that they were less prepared. And so that became funny for that reason.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I love where Natasha Lyonne's career has gone. I just think it's great to watch how she, over all these years she's been in the business, to see where she's gone and what she's doing now. She's just so great.
Oh, she's fantastic, and she's amazing in the new season of Orange is the New Black, and she directed an episode of the new season, and she directed a fantastic episode of Russian Doll, for which she was nominated for an Emmy. And she is outrageously talented, and I feel as if there had been a number of years where people didn't necessarily know what to do with her or weren't giving her the carte blanche to do what she wanted to do, and it's amazing to see that she's in this moment where she's getting those opportunities.
Yeah.
And it's a pleasure to see.
Yeah. She was lovely on last night's Daily Show with Trevor. Very, very good.
On my DVR, along with probably literally everything.
Right. Outstanding Achievement Movie or Miniseries went to Chernobyl.
Which was a hell of a category. I'm kind of curious if that's the way the vote would have gone, if we held our vote 2 months later or 2 weeks later, you know, how much of that might be recency, but I don't know that any of it. I mean, it's entirely possible. People do love Chernobyl, and it really is excellent, so no problems there. For whatever reason, Craig Mazin, who created it, had a, God forbid, a vacation scheduled, so he missed it, but Jared Harris was there and gave a sincere speech on behalf of Craig Mazin. So glad to have him. Jared Harris is great.
Outstanding Achievement in Drama, Better Call Saul.
And that was, and off the record here, of course, because, you know, no one's listening, that was the closest category on the ballot. There were four shows that were within a couple votes in that category, and I think Better Call Saul is fantastic, and I was very pleased to see it get that recognition. I would have been totally pleased to see Succession, Pose, Good Fight. Really, that was a good category to begin with in a tough field because drama is, as we've said before, not all that strong at this exact moment. Better Call Saul is great. And the stars were not there, but they sent a brief video message, and then the producers accepted it and did nicely as well.
Very cool. One more time here, outstanding achievement in comedy went to Fleabag.
It did indeed, and there's still one more, though, because
yeah.
It was a great night for Fleabag. But yes, very, very excited for it, and I hope that the boost that it got from this helps it get a couple of the big Emmys that it's nominated for.
Absolutely. And then Program of the Year went to Fleabag. Yeah, big night for Fleabag there.
It was a huge night for Fleabag. It was the longest, it was the most, I believe, in my, in like the past 15 years that I can remember, the most awards any one show has ever gotten. So, tremendous night. And then, in addition, we also gave our Heritage Award to Deadwood and our Lifetime Achievement Award to David Milch. And that was the first time that basically those two awards were presented in tandem. And David Milch is not in great shape, but he was there. He was appreciative of the moment. He made it to the stage himself and gave his speech himself. And so I guess the feeling that people had, in addition to some sadness, was the feeling that we were glad we gave it him this honor when he was still able to appreciate it as much as he could. So it was tough.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it was. I mean, it was, you know, knowing, you know, what's going on with David Milch right now, the whole watching the Deadwood movie and the whole Swearingen storyline was really kind of, I mean, it was kind of devastating to watch.
It was, and his speech made me cry. It was beautiful, and mostly just so good to have him there and to have him know, and to have him know and know that he was being appreciated in that moment. It's, you know, it's important. Yeah. So you can't put a price on that.
All right. Great stuff. All right, Dan, hang out, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and the TCA Awards were announced. We got some more TV shows to talk about and other things here. We're talking TV, and it's Dan Feinberg and from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And more TV talk after this.
In the days of my youth, I was told what it means to be a man.
Right. Hi. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up, we're going to be talking about how super fans go a little bit too far. We're going to talk about some insane things that people can do with their bodies, and we got some SNL talk as well. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's get back to our conversation here. It is a biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So have you seen the second season of Succession, which debuts this Sunday night?
I have seen the first two episodes. My colleague Tim is reviewing it for THR because he did not get to review it last year, and he wants the chance to say it's a fantastic show.
Right.
And it's entirely fair that he should be allowed to have that opportunity, even if I'm a little jealous. But then again, I'm not sure I have the time to watch more than what I've watched. But the first two episodes are fantastic. That is enough. It is, once again, wonderfully, cracklingly written, devastatingly funny in certain moments, kind of haunting in others, and finger utterly on a certain cultural pulse without going overboard in its treatment of this media empire and the awesome people running it. To me, it is doing most of the things that the loudest voice on Showtime is doing, only it's doing them with a lot more nuance. And it is a great show. People should, if they have not yet, they should tune in to the first season and go from there. Don't just think you can start at the start of the second season. and keep plowing through. I know some people have claims that they think that the show starts a little bit slow. I don't think it really does, but whatever. It is really one of the best shows on TV last year, and in the early going, I think it is one of the best things on TV once again.
That's great to hear. I love it. I love the show. I think it's great, and I'm very excited that it's coming back on Sunday. Very, very excited for that.
So. I'm looking forward to watching more. I wish I'd had more time to watch more of my screeners, but two was enough.
Okay. So last night, the reboot of Beverly Hills 90210, which is called BH 90210, debuted. And if there was any indication by my news feed, everybody on the planet was watching it. So that's what I got from my news feed.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what the ratings actually look like, or if ratings mean anything of any sort anyway. But yes, BH 90210, calling it a reboot is a confusing thing to call it, because what it actually is much, much more confusing than just a reboot, because
okay.
It's not really a continuation of the Beverly Hills 90210 saga. It is all of the actors from the original show, minus, of course, the late Luke Perry, and playing themselves in vaguely fictionalized, vaguely real versions. And the point of the show is that they all independently come to the conclusion that a reboot of Beverly Hills 90210 might be a good idea, and things go from there slowly. But it's a lot of winking and nudging jokes about their particular level of celebrity and about the show itself. There are many, 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 many references to individual episodes, to character arcs, to embarrassing and dumb things that happen on the show, to costumes, to musical choices. It's very much up its own butt, and that's kind of what it's intended to be. Basically, I described it in my review as like if Charlie Kaufman wrote a movie about the stars of Beverly Hills 90210 attempting to reboot Beverly Hills 90210, but Charlie Kaufman was actually Tori Spelling.
Ah, okay. That's
Tori Spelling, not so much as good a writer as Charlie Kaufman.
Right, yeah, I would think so. But I had no idea that that's the angle that they were going to take. Is this going to come as a surprise to people who watched it last night?
I don't think so. It's hard to know how they've been promoting it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure some people expect it to just be a straightforward continuation of the story. They've been promoting it as the actors kind of being themselves, but I don't know if there was any real way to promote it as being the sort of meta twisty thing that it is, and I don't know that necessarily you could have convinced people to watch that. So people will tune in and they'll be raising their eyebrows at what it is, and maybe they'll be laughing some. I laughed some. I wanted it to be better, because I think that the premise that they chose to take is innovative or interesting enough that it could have been a premise that could have supported a really good version of the thing it's trying to be. And instead, it's a lot of pretty easy jokes and a lot of the actors being somewhat charming as themselves. Gabrielle Carteris, for heaven's sakes, gets an actual acting arc, and I'm not sure she got that very frequently on the show itself, and certainly hasn't since. It's a reminder that for a couple of years, Brian Austin Green was doing surprisingly good TV drama acting and then stopped. It's not bad, and it does accentuate some of the likable things about the stars. To me, it could have been significantly better, but I don't know what anyone had any right to expect in terms of quality. So it's probably better than we deserve for such a strange thing.
Yeah, I never watched an episode of 90210. That was not in my wheelhouse at all.
Wait, never an episode?
No, never an episode. I never saw an entire episode of 90210.
It was definitely a cultural phenomenon moment.
Oh, I realize that. I know that. I just never jumped on board. It's like I've never actually seen an entire episode of Friends until I was stuck on a plane on the tarmac at LaGuardia and somebody stuck a videotape in. That was the only time I had ever seen a full episode of Friends.
Oh, that's too bad. Friends was amusing. Whether or not it still holds up all that well, I have not dedicated the Netflix streaming time that apparently lots of people have and that justified the amount of money that HBO Max paid for it. Friends was pretty good in its moment.
Okay. Hey, did they mention the Sharknado movies at all in the show?
They do indeed.
Okay.
It is a thing that is acknowledged as part of Ian Ziering's whatever it is, career. But that's sort of the funny thing about it is that it doesn't acknowledge how much they've pretty much all done self-parody, self-mockery, etc. themselves and previously. So, for example, Tony Scott's movie Domino is not a good movie. It's a mess of a movie because it's a script from the Donnie Darko guy from Richard Shepard, but it's not Richard Shepard, Richard Kelly.
Kelly,
sorry
yeah.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily one of his more coherent scripts, or maybe it's exactly as coherent as the others.
Right, yeah, right.
But one of the aspects of it that I thought was most effective and appealing is Ian Ziering and Brian Austin Green playing themselves in it, and I thought that was really good. I think that Love and Death on Long Island, that Jason Priestley is great in that, and fantastic John Hurt performance. And then several of them have done self-mockery, self-parody in the past, and I think generally better. And so if you haven't seen those things, and heaven knows plenty of people haven't seen Domino or Love and Death on Long Island, it'll probably feel fresher than if you actually have.
I love Love and Death in Long Island. I think it's terrific. And
I think it's a great acting piece for the two stars. I don't know that it's much of a movie as a movie, but the two leads are both absolutely peak performances.
And then finally, how do they handle Luke Perry's death?
I would say poorly. The answer is that it was put into development and pre-production before he died. And he was already not going to be involved. So Shannon Doherty is involved, but Luke Perry, he was simply going to be too busy. And, you know, he has Riverdale. He's already a regular on a TV show. And so they were at some point going to have to deal with the fact that he wasn't doing their thing to begin with. And the way that they do it, the show itself is kind of fundamentally silly. And they try sneaking in these serious and contemplative moments because they know that if they didn't, that would probably be really awful.
Yeah.
I thought the way that they handled it ends up feeling much more tacky than it probably should. I don't think it feels gratuitous or manipulative. It just doesn't feel organic and all that earned in the context.
Yeah.
So I wish they'd done a better job with that.
All right, and I also want you to know that that Luke Perry's one scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is pretty great. So
looking forward to that also.
Yeah. Okay, hang on, Dan, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to talk a little bit more TV right here on 720 WGN. We got the news here, and then afterwards we'll jump right back into more TV talk with Dan Feinberg. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, take a break here on WGN. Right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's 312-981-7200. We are going to be talking about super fans that have gone too far, some insane things that people can do with their bodies, and we got some SNL talk to jump into as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and your Triple Play Thursday requests. Right now, though, let's get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg. He joins us bi-weekly. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking all things TV. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So the Emmys, no host this year.
I think we all kind of expected that that was the case, given that we're, you know, a month and a half out and they have no host.
Yeah.
But yes, it was confirmed at press tour in the Fox executive session with Charlie Collier. He said basically the excuse that he made was that they kind of, the producers looked at the landscape and decided that they would rather use the time dedicated to a host to pay tribute to some of the departing shows from the past year, as if there won't be plenty of paying tribute to Game of Thrones with all the Emmys that presumably been win.
Right.
But whatever. The real and realistic answer is that they don't have an in-house host, and that's what comes from not having anything in the late night day part. And so if you have CBS Emmys, you know that the first two people asked are always going to be Corden and Colbert. If you have NBC, they're always going to start thinking, can we do anything other than Fallon and Seth? You know, Let's get the SNL guys, whatever. And they don't have that at Fox. And so in recent years, when Fox has had the Emmys, they've made kind of off-the-menu selections, like Andy Samberg one year, there was one year Jane Lynch did it, etc. And I guess they just felt as if they didn't really have the right person on staff. And I guess there were the sort of more logical choices where you could have, for example, had, I don't know, the judges from The Masked Singer as your hosts. And or just Ken Jeong. You probably could have, at this point, just had Ken Jeong as the host, right, or Nick Cannon. That would have been a way of doing it. Realistically, their biggest comedy star or sitcom star is Tim Allen, and some people would have been very happy with a Tim Allen hosted Emmys, but I guess they figured probably that would be somewhat polarizing.
Yeah.
And so I think they'll probably bring out several of these people. I think they're, without any question, you will see things affiliated with The Masked Singer on that telecast.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it will not play a large role, but yes, they will have somebody doing an opening. Perhaps it will be the various different grotesque creatures from The Masked Singer. And then it will go off in its own direction. And it was not a disaster, obviously, for the Oscars, and that emboldened people to feel like they could do it. And I don't, you know, look, if it is a highly rated episode or award show or whatever it is, I think a lot of that will have to do with the fact that Game of Thrones last season, 32 nominations, et cetera, et cetera. I think that will be the thing that will be
right,
a draw,
right,
and whether
right,
or not people are able to use that as an excuse to go, oh, well, we don't need a host. We can just apparently have Game of Thrones nominated each year. I don't know. But
yeah,
but we'll see. But I think we knew that this was the direction they were headed, because it's getting really close.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, like you said, like you, when you were talking about it, it worked out fine for the Oscars. The show clipped along, and it was it really didn't miss a host. And I think maybe that was like, you know, the Emmys were like, well, let's just take a clue from that and do it that way.
But as I think I said at the time, I think there's no question that it proved that it is not a mandatory thing,
right,
that
right,
you can get away with doing it without. I don't know that that's necessarily an argument in favor of everybody attempting to do that permanently going forward, and we'll see if the Oscars are able to round up an actual host this year and what difference that makes.
Right.
It's, again, not a disaster. The show does not need it. I'm sure they'll have plenty of star power regardless. And again, it being Fox, there's no one who you clearly miss. So, yeah, I mean, probably they could have gotten Seth MacFarlane to, you know, there are the people they do have on payroll to some level that they could have asked. And for whatever reason, they decided it wasn't worth it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. All right. I'm very excited about this. The new HBO show, A Black Lady Sketch Show. I am so excited about this. And you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it very much. It premiered last week, and I feel inclined to pair it with IFC's Sherman Showcase, which you should also be watching. I made sure that I reviewed both of them separately because I think they're both very, very good. But under a sort of broader umbrella of, here, look, sketch shows don't always do that well with diversity, but here are two really very strong sketch shows created by and starring largely African-American casts, and they're both very, very good. Robin Thede fronts the Black Ladies Gut Show, and it is. I don't want to say, you know, none of these shows are consistent. SNL isn't consistent. In Living Color was never consistent.
Yeah.
You just don't do consistent sketches.
Right.
So when there are sketches in the Black Lady Sketch Show or Sherman Showcase that bomb, they're over in under 2.5 minutes. So you just move on with your life. And I think there's enough that hits in both of the two shows. I think that probably there's more, you know, hit, you know, really quick fire, smart pop culture referencey stuff in Sherman's Showcase that I think, you know, rewards having a certain savvy about the past 20 or 30 years of pop culture that I really appreciated. But I think there's also so much energy and excitement and personality in a Black Lady Sketch Show. I think they're both very strong shows. I've seen all 8 episodes of Sherman's Showcase. It holds up very, very well. I've seen 5 episodes of Black Lady Sketch Show, and it has just a lot of highlights. Those are 2 extremely promising shows that are showcases for an awful lot of talent.
That's great. I'm just so glad that Robin Thede is back on TV, because when they canceled the Rundown, I mean, you know, you've written about it, we've talked about it. What a stupid decision that was on BET's part to cancel the Rundown, which was just a terrific show. And Robin Thede is enormously talented.
She is, and I think that this will be a showcase that will make sure that she keeps writing and keeps performing at a high level and with a high spotlight, regardless of whether this is a show that lasts multiple seasons or only one. I would assume probably HBO didn't put the time and effort into developing it for it to only have one season, especially since it's a fairly brief first season. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. Tremendous cameos on both shows. Both shows are just packed with guest stars and of the highest level. So both are worth checking out. I think that that IFC just does amazing work with these very, very niche, small audience shows, whether The Great Brockmire, whether it's Documentary Now, etc. on IFC. And I think that HBO has been doing good work in this space too, and HBO has been having a really good time programming Friday nights late, because this slot that a Black Lady Sketch Show is in is also the same slot that Los Espookies was in. And
yeah,
there's just weird fun stuff that they're doing. And I like that they're mixing up scheduling, mixing up time slots and saying, okay, not everything needs to be Sunday night at 9. We can do quality work in other day parts.
Right. So Sherman Showcase is on IFC. A Black Lady Sketch Show is on HBO for people who want to watch it. Speaking of HBO, I just started watching Euphoria. I'm late. I was late to the train on this one. I'm really liking it a lot.
I don't mind it. At times, I really like it. I think the performances are all very, very good. I think that it is doing some innovative things. I can never get past my sense that it's a sort of a fundamentally voyeuristic and shock-driven show that, to me, mostly feels like it's being directed at the parents of teens rather than teens.
Mm.
And you know, that's always been a powerful and strong genre, is shows and movies meant to tell parents that their kids are going off the rails. I think this does a persuasive job at that. And it's
yes.
a show that has a lot of visual personality, which I appreciate. And again, the actors are all extremely strong and appealing. I was caught up on it when Press Tour started, which means I'm now 3 episodes behind,
and it's all
just going to be piled up.
Yeah, I just started it. I had heard, you know, I had a couple of friends who were like, Nick, you should be watching this show because it's pretty great. And so I just jumped on that one. So, Dan, before we get out of here, I want to give you the Big Brother update. They're still idiots. it's been a relatively, you know, surprisingly entertaining season. You know, even though a lot of the people in the house aren't even worth rooting for or liking, but at this point, you know, the people behind Big Brother are so good at manipulating the footage into making it dramatic that it still works on a base level. I mean, I've watched every episode. I have not watched After Dark this season because I don't care enough to find. Because the only time I ever watch it is when I want to know who, you know, if there's an endurance test, I want to know who the head of household is before Sunday. But I've not done that. But they put the two big. I will say this: one of the outsiders, a young woman who seemed to be actually from Chicago, that would be Jessica from Chicago, made a massive big move and put the two big lunkheads. She put Aquaman and the other knucklehead up, and neither of them won the power of veto, and they're still up on the block, and we'll see who goes home tonight.
But when we talked just 2 weeks ago, you were all excited because somebody else had put the two knuckleheads up on the
Clifton,
alpha knuckleheads.
Yeah,
but we're making no progress, Nick.
No. We did make progress because one of them is going home. There's no question about it. Because the last time they won the veto and they talked their way out of it and everything, there was a special power that was used. Now it's these two idiots are on the block, and one of the two idiots is definitely going home tonight. So.
Okay, well, I admire and appreciate your perseverance on this one, and I hope that you are, by the end, rewarded with a deserving winner.
Yeah, okay. I was last year. I love JC. I was very happy when JC won last year.
Last year was a good season.
Yeah, it was a great season.
I was perfectly happy to catch up after press tour on Big Brother last year. This year, I quit a week before press tour.
Once again, in 2 weeks, you'll get another update, Dan.
Appreciate it. I need you to let me know if I eventually should feel regret for missing this.
Right.
So far, you're not making me feel that
way. Yeah, okay. All right, Dan, have some fun one more day at TCA, then get some rest and go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds like a plan. Good talking, Nick.
Take care, Dan. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's great. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN.